It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
3 minutes after 1 o'clock here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is after hours here on The Fan. The phone number to join the conversation is 888-808-1019. And we'll get back to your calls in just a bit. But I'm now joined. And you can hear this man on his podcast, New York, New York. You could see him talking with his hands on SNY. He is a WFAN alum. And most importantly, he's a dear friend. And that, of course, is John Jastrzemski. Now, 27 years ago, it's been 27 years since the Knicks made the finals. JJ, take me into the life of JJ 27 years ago. I would imagine your bedroom had a Christina Aguilera poster and a Paul O'Neill poster right next to each other. 27 years. Take me into the life of JJ the last time the Knicks were in the finals.
Well,
did we lose him? Might have lost him. John Jastrzemski, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? That might have been my best interview ever. I think that was the best one I ever had. You know, that's really an easy one there. John's a great guest. You just ask him one question, and then he hangs up immediately. That was like Darrell Revis hanging up on Francesa. No, I think he's having a little bit of a cell connection, all jokes aside. So we could do the setup again. That's all good with me. He had a little bit of a cell issue there. 888-808-1019. Again, that's the number to call. We'll take your calls coming up in a little bit here. We're just going to get JJ back up on his connection. And we're going to talk a lot with JJ. We're going to talk Knicks. We're going to talk Yankees. We're going to talk Mets. We'll get his thoughts on Jackson Dart, the Abdul Carter, Donald Trump situation. There are so many various topics that we are going to run through with John once he gets his cell phone connected there. I mean, that was really like, JJ joins us now from the moon. John, what can you tell us about the moon? And are you really on the moon? Did you really land on the moon? Do you just believe the footage is real, but maybe it was in a Hollywood studio? You know, give us your thoughts, JJ, as you are now currently on the moon. No, he is actually walking around. I was talking to Fleas beforehand. He's like, JJ's just walking around the streets. I said, walking around the streets? I know it's 1 a.m. He can't find a place to go. We were talking about this. He's like, oh, maybe I'll do it from my car. I was like, well, that's fine. When I heard he was doing it from the street, I was like, probably be all right, but you know, the streets of New York at 1 o'clock could be loud. You know, this is the only place in this great planet that we live on that you could buy a car and a slice of pizza at 4 a.m. JJ joins us, so we'll do the setup once again. You know, 27 years ago, the Knicks were in the finals. You know, take me into the life of JJ. I would imagine it was a Christina Aguilera poster right next to a Paul O'Neill poster. But 27 years have gone by. Take me into the life of JJ 27 years ago.
Well, it was what, fifth or sixth grade? So it was 1999, Petrini School, Staten Island, playing baseball at Snug Harbor Little League. I was more of a Britney Spears guy and a Christina Aguilera guy.
So we disagree right out of the gate. I'm more of an Aguilera guy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's a take that would have aged poorly over time. I'll give you that. Listen, I think both are great in their peaks, at their prime. But be that as it may, Tommy, listen, life was great in 1999. I think that's one of the best summers New York's had in the last 40 years. You think about it, Yankees, outstanding dynasty years. Mets kind of have this great second half, the Olerud, Ordonez, Alfonso team, Piazza's really first full season with the Mets, and they go deep. And then, of course, the Knicks, LJ four-point play, Allen Houston shot against the Heat, the whole deal. So hopefully 2026 is like 99 reincarnated. Sign me up for that right now. And Tommy, you know I love you very much because it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I got a sleeping baby at home. I got a sleeping wife at home, and I am having this wonderful conversation with you, walking the streets of Brooklyn at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it is a beautiful, beautiful night. And it's so much more beautiful, Tommy, because we know our beloved New York Knicks are playing an NBA Finals game in, what, 8 days, 9 days? But who's counting, to be honest?
Yeah, and listen, there's so many people in our audience, not only my audience, your audience, that weren't even alive the last time the Knicks were in the finals. Forget about it. You and I weren't even alive when the last time they won the championship. There's even more people in the audience the last time they went to the championship. But first step, obviously, was getting to the finals, and that was 27 years ago. There are plenty of people listening to my voice, you know, day in, day out, that weren't even alive to see it, or they were too young to remember it. So it just tells you so much. And when you consider the way the franchise was ran and how poorly it was ran and how crappy the basketball was for most of these years since 99, it made the wait even longer. But John, give me your overall thoughts, just overall take on this dominating run that we have seen from the Knicks as they've steamrolled their way to the NBA Finals.
It's mind-boggling. It's historical. Think about this for a second. They've won 11 games in a row. If I would have told you, Tom, if they lost game three in Atlanta, terrible loss, off the heels of game two, which was a terrible loss, that not only would the Knicks have an 11-game winning streak in the postseason, they'd be outscoring their opponents by over 200-plus points. Oh, what? Excuse me? And listen, I was bullish on the team going into the year. I think you were in the same boat.
Yep.
I expected them to be in the NBA Finals. I still thought the draw was real favorable for them in the Eastern Conference. Nobody. Maybe Leon Rose, maybe Jalen Brunson, maybe the guys within that locker room saw this coming. Tommy, I sure as hell didn't see this coming. No way. How could you? How could you? They are doing stuff, my friend, that is on the level of, like, all-time teams.
Yeah, the Warriors dynasty, the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, that's what they're doing right now, or that's what they've done in this 11-game winning streak.
Precisely. Precisely. The same team that has not been in the finals in 27 years, the same team that has not won a championship in 50-plus years, and they're doing this sort of stuff. That's why I don't care who the competition may be. Like, yes, they got a very easy road to an NBA final.
Yes.
I think we can all admit that.
Yes.
So did the Celtics a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Yankee fans. So did the Yankees in 2024 when they went to the World Series. You don't apologize for it. And there's nothing fluky about winning 11 in a row and outscoring your opponents by 200-plus points. Nothing fluky about that.
Yeah, look, I think both things can be true. They got two great draws in Philly, who is a gutless team. And then you have the Cavs, who are even bigger, gutless, heartless frauds and just an absolute embarrassment. How they bring back Kenny Atkinson, I have no idea. Not only the way he coached, the guy was taking a nap in the final 8 minutes of game one. But then this guy talking about analytics and the team. I mean, and I know you're not an analytic guy. You got to hear about it with Cashman. You hear about it with Stearns now. The idea, even if you are an analytic guy, you heard Kenny Atkinson after what, game three, say the team is up 2-1 analytically? It's like, Kenny, your team's about to get swept here. Maybe pipe down a little bit, especially with the way you coached in game one.
Tommy, it was an asinine comment. And listen, I think Kenny Atkinson coached a terrible series. I do got to push back, though. Who are they hiring? Honest question. Like, that team, the bigger problem with that team is the personnel of that team.
Yeah, Mitchell and certainly Harden, for
sure. Mitchell's a playoff loser.
He is.
James Harden is the biggest playoff loser in the history of the postseason.
Correct.
They got two bigs who were Mr. Softy 1 and Mr. Softy 2.
Charmin Soft, yep.
Atkinson sounded like a clown. It was hilarious to hear those remarks after game three. But, I don't want to spend too much time on the Cavaliers, but, like, I don't think a different coach comes in and gets a different result out of those players. That's just real talk.
Yeah, to me, game one was the series, I'm not saying the Cavs would have won the series. They wouldn't have. I think it would have been over in five, but their one opportunity to beat the Knicks when the Knicks were a little bit vulnerable, a little bit rusty, was game one. They had a 22-point lead, and then Kenny Atkinson just completely just left the building and decided to not call a timeout, not to take Harden off Brunson, and he blew that series. Let me ask you this one. This is the most hard-hitting question I will ask you. Which has been more enjoyable to watch, this Knicks run to the finals or Sydney Sweeney's performance in the new season of Euphoria?
Well, I was going to say you interrupted some Euphoria watching that I was about to do, to be perfectly
honest.
Both
of them are Euphoria. Let's just be real. Watching the Knicks right now is Euphoria, and watching Sydney Sweeney in this new season has been nothing but Euphoria.
You know, it's obviously the Knicks because, listen, there's a thing called Google. We all know you can do what you need to do.
Correct.
But let's understand something. I don't think I'll ever see a run like this with my basketball team ever again. And that's why it's that much more important, Tommy, and there should be that much more emphasis on winning this championship.
Yeah, we're sharing a brain on that.
There is no guarantee we're sitting here a year from now and you're back in this spot. What? Everybody's healthy and everything goes a certain way. Euphoria, by the way, has actually been better than I thought it was going to be. First episode, I almost quit, to be honest, this season. So I'm back. Long story short, I'm back.
Yeah, it's a great show. I'm a binge watcher, so I actually have not seen a second of it. I mean, I know of what's happening, especially with Sydney Sweeney, so I'm aware.
You got to get through the first episode. That's all I'm going to tell you. The first episode stunk. Once you get through the first episode, you'll be okay.
Yeah, and I always found it to be a show that's extremely, like, it's heavy. There's a lot that they throw at you, so I almost need, like, a shower after a couple episodes. But I think it's a great series as far as television. Now, John, I think you're the best person for what I'm about to ask here, and you just brought it up, and you kind of teed it up in your answer. And I've said this last night for hours on the show, is getting to the finals was bare minimum. The Knicks accomplished that, because when you consider firing Tibbs, hiring Mike Brown, they had to get to the finals. Otherwise, I think Brown would have been out of a job, especially if they lost the first round. You could have argued making major roster changes. Giannis is still kind of hanging over everybody in this franchise like a cloud. But now that they're here and they could take that deep breath and they're not going to break up the core and they're not going to get rid of Mike Brown, they have to win. And when I look at the other teams you root for, see, with the Yankees, I know you haven't won a championship in a long time, but you feel like as a Yankee fan, you know, year in and year out, you have an opportunity to get to the World Series. Doesn't mean they're going to get there every year. They certainly haven't, but you feel like they have that opportunity. Then the football team you root for, everybody thought Dan Marino was going back to the Super Bowl, and he never did. So it's really a tale of, hey, you never know if you're going to get this opportunity again. Like you said, the health, the run that they're on, and even though they're going to level up as far as opponent here in the finals, it does not matter. When you get this close, it could be another 27 years we have to wait. We're both 0-2 in the finals. I certainly don't want to go 0-3 as a fan.
Tommy, I totally get that. And John Starks did an interview a couple days ago. I was reading it. I guess the New York Post had it. And he said after losing Game 7 in Houston, oh, we'll be back. We'll be back. And that group never got back. Well, Patrick Ewing and his team kind of did.
Right.
Like, Patrick Ewing was hurt. It was Sprewell. It was Houston. John Starks was traded to Golden State Warriors.
Yep.
The time is now, because you don't know what the Eastern Conference looks like. And in theory, like, the Knicks are young. This is the team that's growing. This is a team that has unbelievable rapport and chemistry and is, by full definition, a team, right? Every which way imaginable, they are a team. Jalen Brunson's their leader, and it kind of trickles down from there. But is Jalen Brunson going to be the same player in 3 years? I hope he is. Not a guarantee. What is Karl Anthony Towns? What is the Eastern Conference? What is San Antonio with Wembanyama? What are the, you know, it's like
right.
There's so many questions and what ifs. The Thunder are beat up. San Antonio is inexperienced. And you're playing insane basketball. You're on the ultimate cheater on the craps table. And you've been on those cheaters with me. And you got to ride them. And you got to put more money down.
Yep.
And you got to get
press
more bets on the table.
Yep.
That's basically where you're at with the Knicks. It's all in. Because you don't know what next year and the year after that and the year after that is going to bring to the table. You got a chance to win a championship, go win a championship.
No, absolutely. Great points there. As far as the Thunder, look, it's tough to go back-to-back. They are injured. They are vulnerable from that standpoint. Now, they might get healthy. They might get these guys back, certainly for the finals, which totally changes the ball game. But I think San Antonio is way ahead of schedule, or at least a year or so ahead of schedule. I don't think they're ready to win a championship, but they are going to be a major threat for years to come with that core. And look, you and I both grew up in the 90s with the 90s Knicks. And I know for me at least, I just thought that would be Knicks basketball for the rest of my life, because I grew up, and I look at that as like, if you're a Yankee fan that's a little bit younger and you kind of see nothing but winning, if I told you right now, hey, the next 20-something years, the Yankees are going to stink, you're going to say no way. Well, I would have said the same thing as a Knicks fan coming off the 90s run, coming off 99 to the championship round. I would have said the Knicks aren't going to be bad. Well, guess what? They were horrible. They were the worst team in the league for years. So when you get there, you never know if you're going to get back, so you have to win. Now, go ahead, John. Sorry. Go ahead.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
How insane is this, though, to that point? Patrick Ewing's last game as a Knick, which I think was the 2000 Eastern Conference Finals Game 6.
Mm-hmm.
Up until Jalen Brunson signed with the Knicks. Tommy, 20-plus years, single-digit playoff games. One.
Yep.
Single digits. This team enough said over the last couple of years. So I get it, man. I get it. You're going to like this. I want to throw this at you. I know you didn't love this year, but I'm going to give it to you. If Oklahoma City beats San Antonio, you know what this potential finals is shaping up to be in some way?
Mavs Heat?
No, think baseball. You're not going to like it. That's why I want you to guess it.
Are you Mets Royals? I'm trying to think like why I wouldn't
like it. No, I'm going to.
Is it Yankee?
It to you, so we don't waste too much time.
Yeah.
96 Yankees Braves.
Got it. Yep.
Because the Braves play the role of the Thunder. A little different because the Braves have multiple trips to the World Series, but they were monster favorites going into that World Series and won the first two games at Yankee Stadium. And we all know what happened. Game three, David Cohn, Jim Ware, it's on we go. It's a little different from a standpoint of, yes, that Yankee team was on a heater. They weren't on this kind of heater. But I just think the narrative of, hey, Yankees, Braves, the upstart underdog New York team. I'm very much looking forward to the Knicks playing that role. I don't know about you, but I am very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And one quick thing on that before my next question. The one thing I think is getting a little overblown here is the rest for the Knicks. Not only the fact that it might hurt them, I think it actually helps them because you'd rather be rested. Look at the teams that have had this type of rest. We brought up that Warrior team, one of the Warrior teams that won a championship, the Lakers that won a championship with Shaq and Kobe. They've had this type of rest, and it certainly suited them well. And by the way, when you have this type of rest, it means you're a great team and you're dominating your opponents, which would probably be to your advantage in the finals. But it's one of those situations where OKC, if they win tonight, they're going to get 5 or 6 days off too. So they're going to be well-rested and good to go here. You know what I mean? So even if it goes to seven, they're still going to get a couple days off. So I think the rest, as far as the other teams not getting it, might be a little bit overblown.
I'm right there with you. And it worked out pretty well for the Knicks going from the Philly series to the Cleveland series, did it not? I'm always of the mindset, the great teams get the rest. So when you have a chance to get the rest because any additional playoff game you play, you run the risk of something negative happening to your team, a tweaked hamstring, groin, broken wrist, whatever it might be. So you get the rest, get the rest.
We're talking to John Jastrzemski, New York podcast. You can also see him on SNY. Our dear friends over at Freezing Cold Takes. You know, after, you know, a big game or a big series, especially maybe a surprising outcome, they love to show everybody the receipts. They love to keep the receipts, and then they love to show them. So I'm going to read you a tweet here. One of them said, firing Tibbs from Mike Brown would be all sorts of gross, about 6 exclamation points, and a puking emoji. The person that tweeted that is John Jastrzemski.
That is correct.
Now, JJ, I bring that up because I have a bad one about Brunson that I'm sure is going to get brought up. I understand where you were coming from at the time, so I'm not saying I disagreed with you a little bit at the time, but obviously now there's no way to argue what you said. But just give me your thoughts on Mike Brown and the job that he has done, especially here in this playoff run.
Listen, I think he's done a wonderful, wonderful job in his first year. Wonderful, wonderful job. Because you were going to learn about Mike Brown through a period of adversity. I didn't give a rat's ass if Mike Brown won 65 games in the regular season or if he won 48 games in the regular season. But when the chips were on the table and the Knicks were kind of feeling it in that Atlanta series, he made an adjustment, did he not?
Yep.
He put Karl Anthony Towns to the high post. They started running the offense through Cat. They had great success in that Atlanta series. Then all of a sudden, Mikal Bridges looks like a lost puppy in most of the Atlanta series. He keeps his confidence, even though he benched him a couple of different times in the fourth quarter. He goes and has the big game six like everybody else, and it was a springboard for Mikal Bridges. So being able to like read his locker room, manage his players, know the feel, the pulse of your team, play the bench. And listen, I'll give this to Tibbs last year. A lot of these bench guys were hurt. Mitchell Robinson missed most of the year. Landry Shamet missed time. But Tibbs didn't do a good enough job with the bench. And he wasn't collaborative enough. And that was the knock on him. You wanted to see how that approach would work. And here's the moral of the story, Tommy. Who am I now to forever question anything that Leon Rose does?
Bingo.
Because that was, remember, a lot of convos in the summertime were, Dolan wanted Tibbs fired.
Yep, he was mad at him.
Dolan move.
Yep.
I totally disagree with that. I think it was Leon Rose. I think Leon Rose took input from a whole lot of people. I think he made a decision that was probably very, very difficult to make because he and Tom Thibodeau go way back. But he felt like a change was needed to unlock the next level of this team. This postseason run has unlocked the next level of this team. And I don't know if you feel this way. I think the Knicks could have gotten to the NBA Finals with Tom Thibodeau. Absolutely. I think they could have gone through this path in the Eastern Conference if Tibbs was the coach. Do I think they're winning 11 playoff games in a row? No. Do I think they're outscoring their opponents by 200-plus points? No. And that's where Mike Brown gets a ton of credit. One thing, though. For this to ultimately be deemed a slam-dunk, no-brainer decision, Tommy, they got to win.
For that, yeah, for the slam dunk, no-brainer, I agree with you. I think it justifies the hiring by getting to the finals, but winning the championship, then it's just an absolute no-doubter. And you, I think you brought up a bunch of great points there, so I'll take them all kind of one by one there. And I said this last night because, look, I questioned the Brunson move. I was on the air when OG got traded, or I was on the air that day, and I know there were a lot of Knicks fans that were upset that RJ got traded, that IQ got traded. There were people that were upset about the Karl Anthony Towns move. I think bridges across the board, people are excited, but, oh, they gave up too many picks. We are at the point now where Leon Rose, who I think has done as good an executive job as anybody in the history of this city, the Knicks were in the toilet. They were a disgrace. They are what the Jets are right now. They were an absolute joke, beyond joke. And now they are not only a well-oiled machine, they're four games away from a championship. So Leon Rose deserves, not like he's not going to make a bad move again the rest of his career, but we should stop questioning his decision. And that leads me to the Tibbs thing. The one thing that I think about that is, you know, everybody wants to point the fingers at, and I do agree with you, Leon Rose was a big part of that decision because I don't think that Tibbs unlocked players like Bridges and Cat. Like, Tibbs, Leon Rose put his neck out there. That was his big swing. Bridges and Cat. That was his putting his chips in the middle, like the poker phrase. He put all his chips in the middle. It was Cat. It was Bridges. And Tibbs did not unlock those guys. And I think everybody saw that as maybe Mikal and Cat kind of went, you know, to Leon Rose and or to Dolan and said, we got to get rid of Tibbs. Let me just throw this out there because I've never heard anybody really say this. If Jalen Brunson wanted Tibbs back, Tibbs would be back. So everybody wants to say, I wouldn't be stunned if Hart and Brunson wanted Tibbs out of here too. Because you know what? When they got to the playoffs, they were tired, they were injured, they didn't play the bench, and I think those guys saw the ceiling as well. Now, I'm speculating, but I just feel like in the NBA, if your star player stands up for the coach is not getting fired.
I think it was a universal, collective agreement. Everybody, I think, was on board.
Correct.
Everybody.
Correct.
And it's stunning. I found it stunning at the time. I was disappointed by it. But how can you argue it now? You can't. You'd be an idiot to do so. Idiot. And you know what the hope is? Going back to 96, that this is your Buck Showalter to Joe Torre.
Yeah.
That this is your Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr. And the problem I had, Tom, is that Mike Brown had been around the NBA forever. And it was like, okay, he went to the finals with LeBron, whoop-de-doo, didn't excite me. Coached the Lakers, eh. Then coached Orlando, eh. Did a nice job in Sacramento. And looking back on what he did in Sacramento, it looks better and better considering what a dumpster fire that organization is.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just one of these guys that had a solid workman-like resume. But when the Knicks initially fired Tibbs, I'm like, wow. They had their sights set on, like, one individual. It's like they were talking Billy Donovan. They were talking Jason Kidd. There were rumors about Chris Finch in Minnesota. And when they ended up with Mike Brown, I was like, Mike Brown? Really? And you know what? Turned out to be an excellent, excellent hire.
Yeah, it was the right guy. And look, he got with the program, which Tibbs didn't want to do, which is playing the bench, you know, making the younger players better, you know, growing the younger players, things of that nature, limiting the minutes throughout the regular season so that they would be healthy. More three-point shots. Look, I know there are a lot of old-school fans that don't like the three-pointer, but you have to hit threes, which the Knicks do at a great rate, and you got to be able to defend the three. So Mike Brown brought all that in, and I think, listen, Tibbs was probably stubborn, didn't want to take some advice from a Leon Rose or members of the staff, whether it's a Rick Brunson. Mike Brown came in here with a lot of pressure, but a wonderful opportunity, and I think he's willing to work within that committee. And guess what? It has worked brilliantly because they're four games away from a championship. Who would you say is the most important Knick during this run?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. Loaded, loaded question.
Because the obvious, because it's always Brunson. But I mean, if think a little outside, I'm trying to get you to think a little outside of that.
No, I wouldn't go there. I would either go Cat or Bridges, and you could make a case for Anunoby too. But I think they're a different offensive team when Carl Anthony Towns is engaged and is dialed in, and the way he's distributing, the way he's attacking, the kind of ball he's playing, and the Knicks offense is just, it has been in the regular season the last 2 years, Tommy, and it is this year, especially in this postseason. It's totally different when Mikal Bridges is aggressive and is taking the ball to the rack and he's finishing with those mid-range jumpers. I think it's those two guys. Maybe it's because from a consistency standpoint, I know what you're getting with Brunson, and I know what you're getting with Anunoby. I know he comes in and out of games offensively, but I know I'm getting great two-way play. He's going to hit the corner three. He's going to get some buckets in transition. I don't know if you feel that way. I know what I'm getting with Anunoby. Those other two guys were far more of the enigmas.
Yep.
And they've answered the bell.
No, absolutely. So I think Carl Anthony Towns is playing the best basketball of his career. And I really think he's been playing that ever since the deadline. I wonder out loud if the Giannis stuff was bothering him, because in the first half of this year, Carl Anthony Towns, and we know defensively he doesn't always bring it, but offensively he was just off. And I think all those noise was getting to him. And once he realized he was going to be a part of this team and a part of this run, he relaxed. He took a deep breath. He got out of his sort of mindset and feels. And now we're seeing his best basketball. But to me, the guy is Bridges. He was at his lowest moment, I thought, of his Knick career after game two, where he didn't go to the basket, missed the shot to end the game. And then he had the donut, the bagel, 0 points in game three. And there was an avenue or an opportunity for Mike Brown to take him out of the starting lineup. Mike Brown, to his credit, did not do that, and I believe that was the motivation and really the backing that Bridges needed. Because, yeah, he had moments last year in the playoffs, but like you said, this aggressive Mikal Bridges, the guy we saw in Phoenix, the guy we saw early in Brooklyn, that's the guy we've seen in this run ever since he had that zero in Game 3 against Atlanta. He has been phenomenal, and I want to give a little bit of a shout-out to Landry Shamet. A guy that, you know, he is responsible for anybody winning game one against Cleveland, that comeback. The one game when OG was out, game three against the Sixers. Deuce was great in four, but Landry Shamet had an awesome game there. He's just a guy, John, that you could rely on both defensively and offensively. He's a pro's pro. He's not afraid of the big shot or the big moment. Shamet has been extremely important in this run, and you need guys like that, the others, as Shaq would call them. I got to give a lot of flowers to Landry Shamet.
Well, it's amazing how when you go on one of these runs, these unlikely heroes come out of nowhere, and they develop these reputations where, like, Landry Shamet now is never going to have to worry about paying for a drink in New York City ever again.
No.
Like, that's it. Like, he's in the, you know, David Tyree has that going for him. Jimmy Laritz. And Scott Brosius have that going for him. Lawrence Tynes. These guys,
yep,
who are not the household names, but in the biggest of moments, they're shining for you. And when it comes to Bridges, listen, Mike Brown not losing Mikal Bridges is a huge deal. For this next series, though, I'm telling you right now, Towns, to me, is the biggest key. Towns is going to have to be enormous against either the double bigs of OKC, and OKC is going to look to body him and bully him. Yeah, Hartenstein, who everybody loved, myself included, great Nick.
Same.
We're sad to see him go.
Yep.
The Knicks fan is going to be so sick of Hartenstein, Tommy. By the time you hit game two of this series, they're going to be like, enough of him. All the good things you have to say about him, you're going to be like, enough. Because I've seen what he's done in this series. He is looking to get on the Wembanyama skin, and it's worked. It's worked, because Wembanyama stunk in game five. First of all, bad look from Wembanyama. You stink in game five, and then you don't meet the media after the game. The Spurs, I think, are cooked. I think they're losing tomorrow. I think the line is a joke, that it's 3.5. I am all over Oklahoma City. That is a play I am making outright. But you need Towns. Whether it's the Spurs, who are not going to come back and win the series, or it's going to be Oklahoma City, you need Towns to show up.
All right, that was actually going to be one of my next questions, what you thought about the Western Conference Finals and how it was going to... I know you like OKC in the series. I didn't know if you thought San Antonio would win in Game 6, and I want to know if you agree with me on this. To me, if San Antonio comes back and wins this series, like, think about where they're at right now. They just got their teeth kicked in. They are down 3-2 to the defending champs. If they were to win this series, that would include a Game 7 in Oklahoma City. If they win this series, to me, that's their championship. This is a young team that's ahead of schedule. They just knocked off the defending champs down 3-2, winning a Game 7 on the road. they would then have to get themselves mentally ready, which they don't have the experience where OKC, if they were down 3-2 and then came back, even if they had to win a game 7 in San Antonio, because of the championship pedigree, the DNA, and the veterans that they have, their winners, their champions, I know that they know how to go and find that in their mindset to get ready for the finals. I think the Spurs, with their youth, their lack of depth, and the fact that they had to come back 3-2 in this series, they would get rolled by the Knicks. I think the Knicks would win in 5 going away. I think they'd absolutely steamroll them. So you don't have the Spurs getting there, so it's a moot conversation. But if it is the Thunder and the Knicks, how do you see that series playing out?
I think it's a classic. I think it's an absolute classic. I think the narrative, Tommy, and I might have been guilty of subscribing to this, was that, hey, whoever comes out of the Western Conference, the Eastern Conference team is the sacrificial lamb. I've heard a lot of that. Totally disagree with it now. Not what the Knicks have shown me. You can't play like this and dismiss their chances. You'd be an idiot to do so. However, here to me is the must for the Knicks. They got to win it in 6. That Game 7 Oklahoma City environment is as good as any environment in sports. I, gut feel, do not think the Knicks will win a Game 7 in OKC. If they can smell it and taste it on their home floor, back-to-back championships, I think Oklahoma City would win in 7. So what am I getting at here? Knicks going to win this series? I think they got to win in a short series. 5 games, 6 games, and continue riding this wave of momentum that we've seen literally now for the past month. Like, that to me is the pathway for the Knicks winning this series. And it means dealing with the physicality that they're going to bring, because yep, they're going to play defense in a way that the Knicks have not seen. It's real talk. I mean, Cleveland, Philly, Atlanta's been the best defensive team the Knicks have played. That tells you all you need to know. It's a different animal if you're playing Oklahoma City. They need to handle that physicality. They also need to stay within themselves. I know that sounds very cliche and simplistic, but it's true. You can't have Cat out of his element. You can't go back to dribble, Jalen Brunson taking shots. This sort of free-flowing, unbelievable offense that we've seen, that's got to be your hallmark and your calling card to get you home.
I think game one is going to be so important because obviously the Knicks have had the long layoff again, which I do think is advantageous. But we saw the long layoff against Cleveland in game one, down 22 with 8 minutes to go. Spoiler alert, if the Knicks are down 22 in Oklahoma City in game one with 8 minutes to go, they're losing. They're not coming back on the Thunder. And I'm as big a Knicks fan as you're going to find. They're not coming back in that game. And I want to see, John, because we haven't yet, how the Knicks respond, not only to the physicality that they're going to see from whoever gets by here, but also when they lose. In theory, they're going to lose a game, right? How do they respond to a loss? I think about it like, I'll bring up Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, in his early stage of his career, knocked everybody out, short fights, whatever. He just steamrolled people. But when he was made to be uncomfortable, when Buster Douglas made him uncomfortable, he didn't know how to respond. It's been a long time. So even in that 22-point game, it was an easy comeback because the Cavs didn't do anything to make the Knicks uncomfortable. When they are uncomfortable, when this team there's physicality and they lose a game, how do they respond? I want to see that because it's been a month since they face adversity. And sometimes that could be a great thing if you continue the momentum, JJ, like you brought up. But if that momentum gets stopped, how do they respond to getting punched in the face?
It's a fair question. The only example you have of this group throughout the postseason this year is the Atlanta series.
They're not playing Atlanta in the finals.
I totally get that. And, you know, it's interesting. Punch time minutes haven't really been a thing in this postseason. Like, what crunch time games have the Knicks played? They played game 2 in Atlanta against Atlanta. They lost.
Yep.
Game 2 against Philly was tight. I was in the building for that one. They pulled away late.
Game 3 was tight.
And obviously, they game 1 against Atlanta. Cleveland.
Yep.
Yeah, but other than that, there haven't been these games where it's like, you know, and the Knicks are used to this because last year when they put Indiana and the Celtics and Detroit, it felt like every game was these, like, down-to-the-wire crunch time minutes, yep, needing to execute in the final 2 or 3 minutes. So if you're in a series that's like that, making sure that this free-flowing nature within the offense got to continue, man. It's got to. Like, if you see this series turning into a lot of games in which Jalen Brunson's shooting the ball north of 27 to 30 times, that's not good for the Knicks.
Yeah, the two things that would, besides the fact, like if OKC gets healthy here, that's problematic because they're extremely deep and extremely talented. SGA being a foul merchant, getting to the line, and the physicality, especially on Brunson, because he has been living easy here. The Sixers have nobody that could guard him. The Cavs have nobody that could guard him, whether it's OKC or San Antonio. But let's just call it OKC because they're up 3-2 and in all likelihood are going to win the series. They are going to bring a different type of physicality, especially if J-Dub is healthy. And that can give Brunson problems. It has to. We see Indiana like do it against them. That has been sort of the bugaboo of Brunson is the physicality. So that's the thing that would scare me the most. Now speaking of Brunson here, John, and I had a caller, I think like right around the start of the playoffs, bring this up. And he matter-of-factly said that Jalen Brunson is already on the Mount Rushmore of Knicks. And I vehemently disagreed with that. When you're talking about a franchise that has, you know, Hall of Famers, guys that have won championships, and you look at Willis, and you look at Clyde, and you look at the Busher, and you look at Earl the Pearl Monroe, even Patrick, who made the finals. Obviously, Brunson now in the finals. Even now, I can't put Jalen. And by the way, Patrick Ewing was a great player, as you know, on both ends of the floor here. Brunson is not a great defensive player. I understand the drought. I understand what he's doing, and I understand how great he is. He's close, but I don't have him on the Mount Rushmore yet. We all know how he can get on there, but I'm curious where you are at as far as Brunson in terms of that type of Knicks all-time list.
Okay, so right now you can crack the top three. Clyde, Willis, Patrick. I think Jalen Brunson's closing in on number four.
Wow.
He's closing in on number four. Dude, look at what he's done.
Yeah.
Look at how he has built the franchise from the ground up. They win 50 games every year. They're in back-to-back conference finals. He took a team that was in the lottery. You know, they had that Julius Randle year. They go 37-45. Brunson comes in. They do nothing but win. And if he wins a championship, Tom, he's ahead of Patrick Ewing.
100%.
It's crazy to say. And I understand you can't compare the statistics. Different era of NBA basketball.
Yep.
The center in Patrick's time mattered that much more. Ewing, you mentioned, is both ends of the floor, all world defensively. The post moves, scoring 20-plus points a night when offense was way down in the NBA, where that was actually, dare I say, an achievement. But if Jalen Brunson ends this drought and is the face of ending this drought, and this Knicks team that a lot of people, myself included, looked at Jalen Brunson and said, nice player, like him, they have a starting point guard. Did I ever in my wildest dreams think that Jalen Brunson would be the best player on a team that's playing in the NBA Finals, that has a legitimate chance to win the NBA Finals? No way. So when I think about all-time New York Knicks, yeah, dude, I'm putting him ahead of Ewing if he wins a championship. He's got to do it. He's got to do it, but I will do it.
We're talking to John Jastrzemski. A few more before we let him go. New York, New York podcast, SNY. It's a conversation that we've had a lot on this radio station or just, you know, out at the bar or wherever, and that is the idea of which parade, like the next parade, you know, which one would be the biggest? Would it be a Jet parade, obviously, because of their drought? Would it be a Met parade? What would it be? And my take was always the Knicks because of the drought, because it is the team that unifies us all. It's New York City's team. And also the weather. It's just going to be super nice out, I would imagine, because of the time of year. Can you even, I know they're four wins away, John, can you even envision what a parade for the Knicks will look like in this city?
I cannot. No. I cannot. And that is spot on, by the way. No disrespect to the Jet and Met fan that's listening. It's not even close. The Knicks by a mile. And I understand there are droughts for the Mets, 86. The Jets going back to Joe Willie Namath. The Knicks unify the city.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you walk. Tommy, I'm in the neighborhood in Brooklyn. Knicks shirts, Knicks hats. Let's go Knicks. Because you don't have the split decision. You don't have the houses divided of Yankee and Mets fans or Giant and Jeff fans. And I absolutely don't remember the Ranger Parade in 1994. I was 7 years old. So I wasn't there. I didn't experience it. I'm sure it was crazy on one of the wildest days in the history of our country in the last like 30, 35 years.
Yep.
I mean, at least in New York City, because you had the Ranger Parade, you had a Knicks game five against the Rockets, and oh, by the way, the Ford Bronco and O.J. Simpson, just a little food for thought. So it was a crazy, crazy day. No, I can't imagine what it would be like. And I don't know what the state of the city would be. It would just be, here's what I envision, Tom. They win the NBA championship. Imagine like a week, 2 week bender party, nonstop.
Yep.
Summer in the city.
The best.
Celebrating the unthinkable.
Yep.
The parade will be the culmination.
Well, and also too, and this is one of the things that make the Knicks so special is the arena, where it is in the middle of the greatest city in the world, the celebrities, and you know they're going to be out. Donald Trump is talking about going to one of the games here, the finals at the Garden. You have all the celebrities, not just the regulars, but the star-studded, not only at these games, but at the parade. It is just going to be electric. Hopefully it happens, and it's going to be something like we've never seen before when you consider the drought. Now, I want to pivot quickly, get your quick thoughts on a few of the things with baseball here. Would you agree with me that it's World Series or bust for the Yankees, much like with the Knicks, considering how bad the American League is?
Yes. Yes. And if not now, when? That rotation is so outrageously good if everybody is healthy. Can you imagine playing a 7-game series and seeing Cam Schwitler, Gerrit Cole, and Max Fried as like your Game 3 starter? What? Come on, man. That is outrageous. And look, the Yankees, can they hit good pitching? I don't know. The bullpen has its problems. But yeah, like that hourglass is ticking. I feel like I say it every year with Aaron Judge. It's ticking. And you don't want to be sitting there at the end of his career saying he didn't win a world championship. So yeah. I know the Dodgers are great. I know they're going to be favorites to go and win their third straight championship. Yes, it's World Series the bust. 100%.
In terms of Aaron Judge, what we've seen from him so far this year, especially when he hasn't been playing well, you think slump or you think at 34 years old, this is the start of a decline?
Look, the last 4 years have been cyborg type numbers.
Yep.
Cyborg. It's okay if Aaron Judge hits 270 with like a 950 OPS instead of an 1100 OPS. Okay. It's okay. I need Aaron Judge to hit in October. So I know the Yankees are going to be there. I don't need this to be another one of these years where Aaron Judge has the best season of his life. I don't look at it and say age. I just think it's a lot to ask, Tom, to have somebody put up all-time record-setting power slugging numbers from the right side of the plate. Like, sooner or later, you're going to have one of these years where it's very good. It's probably top 10 in the league good. Tom, it might be good enough to win the MVP in the American League.
Yeah.
But it's not the numbers that you're accustomed to with Aaron Judge. The power numbers are fine. The OPS is fine. I'm not worried.
Okay, final one here on my Mets. Do you think, JJ, that Steve Cohen needs to address the fans, whether it be on Twitter, whether it's on this radio station, whether he even does an interview with Gelbs, somebody? Do you think Steve Cohen needs to address the fans soon, whether it's within the next couple of days? Do you feel like Steve Cohen needs just to kind of tell everybody what's going on, how he feels, where he sees everybody, Mendoza, Stearns, not only the present but the future of this franchise? Do you think Cohen has to hit the podium, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. At some point in time, that needs to happen. It doesn't have to happen tomorrow or on Friday, but the team has been the biggest disappointment in all of baseball. Tom, they had the third best odds in Vegas at the start of the year to win the World Series.
Yep.
It was the Dodgers. It was the Yankees. And maybe it was the Mariners. Maybe it was the Mets. Splitting hairs, depending on your book. The point being is, to be double-digit games under 500 is an absolute disgrace. I don't want to hear about injuries. They signed Bo Bichette to a $47 million contract. He's got a sub-6 OPS. Your boy Simeon thinks he should go to the retirement home because he can't hit and he can't play anymore. And, you know, a lot of it was made of the Brandon Nimmo trade. Look, I like Carson Bench. Carson Bench is going to be a player. Hitting 3. I know he had a 1-for-15 road trip. Who the hell cares? The guy has exactly what I'm looking for out of a leadoff hitter. I think you have something in A.J. Ewing, although his power is not there. So you've kind of, in a way, in the outfield, you kind of have replaced Nimmo down the road. But they missed the polar bear. They do. And I'm stunned how that all played out. To me, should have been a Met for life. They completely dropped the ball on that because David Stearns didn't want to pay him. Steve could have gotten in the way. Steve's letting David Stearns cook. The problem is David Stearns is cooking a you-know-what meal. It's a disaster right now. And I don't want to hear about where the franchise was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. They have a crazy high payroll. They should not be this bad. So to answer your question, yes, at some point in time, I want to hear from the guy who's cutting the checks, who is more than willing to do whatever it takes to build a winner. There is no way in the world Steve Cohen, when he's cutting those checks, when he's hanging out at spring training and he's watching his mess, did he say to his trust fund guys, yeah, I think around Memorial Day, I'm going to be 10 games under 500. Are you kidding me? 10 games under 500. And I know 2 years ago, they turned their season around. It's a much different National League. Every team in the Central is over 500. The Braves are running away with the NL East. And by the way, the Mets never beat the Atlanta Braves. So good luck in those head-to-head matchups. And the Phillies, it's interesting. The Mets did not fire a manager. The Phillies did fire a manager. The Phillies have taken off. They're back to the 500 mark. They're getting a little Donnie baseball magic. And, you know, I don't have much love lost for the city of brotherly love. I'd love to see Mattingly and the Phillies go on a run for obvious reasons. That's my guy, 23, the stash, everything that comes with it. But do I want to hear from Steve at some point? Because, Tommy, I've made a lot of bad purchases on the credit card. You know this. I pay my bills. I pay my bills.
Yeah, but it's future JJ's problem. I hear you. You take the plastic out and it's future JJ's problem, not current JJ's.
No, but I don't get into debt. No. I don't get into debt. I pay my bills. I pay them full. But I like to spend from time to time. But then there'll be purchases when you look at the credit, when you look at that credit card statement and you say to yourself, what did I do? I can't use some language because I'm on terrestrial radio right now, so I got to be well behaved. But yeah, I'll use some four letter words where it's like, wow, I blank and spent this on this and that on that. That's what I would be doing if I'm Steve Cohen right now. And I'd be going into David Stern's office saying, David, what the hell is going on here, man? Dude, you were the chosen one. I picked you to run the team and this is the result. That's a problem. So yeah, I want to hear from the owner.
JJ, always appreciate the time. Win or lose, we'll get you back on after the finals. Knicks, probably OKC. Game one will be Wednesday night. Always appreciate the time. We'll talk offline.
The pleasure is all mine. The weather is beautiful, by the way. It's like 140, breeze in the air. I'm talking to you, and now I get to go finish up Euphoria. Let's go.
And I'll finish up the show. I think, you know, and as much as I love doing the show, I think I'd rather be finishing up Euphoria. JJ, always good to talk to you. That's John Jastrzemski, New York podcast. You can see him on SNY. Okay, great conversation there. If you're just tuning in now, you can go back on the Odyssey app, rewind, listen to it. We'll post it in the podcast as well. We'll get back to your calls here. And I definitely want to address the Steve Cohen situation as far as whether or not he should meet the media. So Mets conversation coming your way this next hour. Knick conversation throughout the overnight here. Yankees as well. 888-808-1019. It is After Hours. Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
155. Here on The Fan in New York City, Tommy Lugauer. Lugie, it is After Hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call as we await an opponent for the Knicks. And perhaps 24 hours from now, we will find out who that opponent is if the Thunder are able to take care of business in San Antonio. They're up 3-2 in that series. The Fan Focus is presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. So I just had my buddy John Jastrzemski on last segment. If you want to go back, the Odyssey app, the rewind function, and wherever you get your podcasts after the show and check out that interview with JJ. One of the things we discussed was the Western Conference Finals, and JJ thinks the Spurs are cooked and OKC is going to win this in six. I disagree with him on that. As far as I think OKC is going to win the series, but I want the Spurs to win it. I do think San Antonio will show up in game six. I think they got one more punch in them. And then in game seven, that'll be a rough scene for them. But I do think San Antonio will figure out a way to get this to a game seven. Now, as much as I want these two teams to beat each other up, to go seven, to go three overtimes in game seven, the more I thought about it and the more I've kind of mapped it out in my brain, especially if it ends up being OKC, and even if it goes seven games. Yes, the Knicks are getting a long rest, and that will do them wonders for sure. And they've earned that rest. And when you have this type of rest, it means you are a great team on a great run, which they are. But the Thunder, especially if they win tonight, they're going to get Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. They're going to get 5 days off before the game on Wednesday. And they don't have to travel, you know, once they get back to OKC, where the Knicks would then have to travel. So I don't think the rest is going to be something, or I should say the turnaround for the team who wins this series, even if it goes seven, it's not going to be like a killer turnaround for them. The Knicks will have had more rest, but because it's the finals and the league sets it up this way, the team that gets out of the West will also have rest as well. And we'll find, you know, hopefully we have an answer. Well, hopefully we don't have an answer. Hopefully the Spurs win the series, because I just see it going the Knicks away in the finals. I think they wax San Antonio. I really do. And I'll lay out why later on the show. We'll also get into the Mets and why I think Steve Cohen should meet the media or just say something on Twitter at this point. And we'll talk more big picture with Mendoza's future, with David Stearns' future, as the Mets did win a game. They broke their losing streak, and they will play the Marlins this weekend at Citi Field. Plus, the Yankees, what a difference a week makes, as they are now only a couple games back, three to be exact, in the loss column against the Rays. All right, 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. We'll get to those calls coming up in just 1 second. And like I said, all the topics on the table here. You want to talk Knicks, you want to talk Yankees, you want to talk Mets. All of it will be discussed over the next 3 hours until the warm-up show at 5 a.m. with Al and Jerry. It's After Hours. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night, here on The Fan.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.